We made USAA insurance to help you save. Take advantage of discounts when you cover your home and your ride. Discover how we're helping members save at usaa.com/bundle. USAA. Restrictions apply.
This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Ping.fm, and UpSnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Madeira Show, where he will discuss testosterone optimization and full body health for the high-performance modern man. Now, here's your host, Dr. Madeira.
Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Madeira back here on my show today. And today we have a special guest, Dr. Amy Killen. How's it going today, Dr. Killen?
It's going great. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for being on the show. I'm really excited to have you share your expertise with the audience and all that you do for men's health and anti-aging medicine, regenerative medicine. So for the audience, Dr. Amy Killen is a nationally recognized anti-aging and regenerative physician specializing in aesthetics and sexual optimization. Dr. Killen merges diet, lifestyle, and integrative medicine with stem cell medicine to give her patients the most effective cutting-edge therapies currently available. And she's an international speaker, clinical practice owner, regenerative medicine instructor, and frequent podcast guest. Dr. Killen believes that sexual health is not a luxury, but is one of the main pillars of health that supports us in our quest for wellness and longevity. Couldn't agree more. So you do a lot of regenerative medicine, integrative medicine, as well as optimizing sexual health through things like PRP and stem cells. Is that right?
Yes. I kind of do all of the above. I have two different practices here in Utah in the Salt Lake City, Park City areas. And they're each a little bit different, but basically trying to bring several different modalities from the integrative space into the regenerative space and be able to help people to optimize sexual function.
Awesome. Spectacular. And how did you get into more of these injection therapies for sexual health optimization? Was it you were already doing some PRP and then you started having more interest in that area, or were your patients having more sexual problems and you were kind of pushed by your patient population? How did this come about?
So my initial background is emergency medicine. I was an emergency medicine physician for about 10 years and eventually kind of saw the, you know, chronic disease problems over and over again and decided to transition into integrative medicine. I was doing a lot of work with hormones, with bioidentical hormones for both men and women. And what I found is that patients, you know, they come in feeling pretty miserable, low energy, weight gain, you know, like just feeling really bad, depression, things like that. And then once they got on a good hormone regimen and we started working on their diet and their lifestyle and such, they'd come back, you know, 3 or 6 months later and they would say, thank you so much, I'm feeling better, but now can you please help me with my sex life or with my skin? I got a lot of skin questions as well. But people started asking me over and over again what I could do to help them to have better sex. And so I started looking into it and stumbled upon regenerative medicine, started with PRP, and eventually added in doing some more advanced therapies with stem cells and exosomes and things like that.
That's awesome. And so what are your more popular or more frequently used injection therapies or regenerative medicine therapies for sexual health for men's health issues like erectile dysfunction, for example?
So I treat a lot of ED, and I will, you know, depending on the person and kind of what they're wanting, certainly I've done a lot of PRP. I've been doing PRP for probably 6 years or so for men's sexual, either for ED or just for men who just want to have improved sensation or improved function, even if they don't actually have erectile dysfunction. A lot of men now come to see me. I have a lot of patients come from out of state or out of the country even, specifically because they're interested in getting stem cells, which is not something that you can get everywhere. So I have a lot of guys coming in for that. So we'll do essentially the P shot, but with stem cells plus PRP and also oftentimes with exosomes as well. So I'll do those things all together, and then I'll follow it up with like a Gainswave, a shockwave therapy session as well. And so I kind of do this whole procedure all in one sitting.
And so that's one visit, one day, and then they're done?
Right. Well, it depends on where they are. If they are local or if they happen to travel here a lot, then certainly I'll get them on a longer regimen. I recommend that they follow up with the Gainswave or the shockwave therapy sessions, doing at least six of those usually, sometimes more depending on the situation. So if they can do that here with me, great. But if they are somewhere else, then I'll send them home and get them in touch with doctors near them that can do those follow-up sessions, you know, locally for them. So they don't have to travel back and forth to see me over and over again.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, excellent. And when we're talking about doing injections for erectile dysfunction in the penis, are we talking about just, I'm kind of playing, you know, like I'm pretending like I don't know anything about this procedure audience. How many injections are we talking about, and how, with the preparation of the procedure, is there like a nerve block or something, or what are the men to expect who have no idea going into this? If there's a listener considering, hey, you know, I've had erectile dysfunction for a while, I'm already doing some maybe testosterone replacement therapy, but I'm getting tired of taking erectile, you know, medications and things that sometimes work and sometimes don't. What would they expect coming in to see you for stem cell injections or PRP or all the above, like you were saying, exosomes? You know, how many injections? Is there a nerve block?
Yeah.
What's the pre and post preparation?
So it depends on the person. If someone's coming in just for a PRP injection, just for a P shot, you know, PRP, obviously we're just getting blood from the patient, centrifuging it and injecting it. I just do a topical numbing cream usually. And that actually works really well. There's sometimes a little tiny pinch, but it's actually one of the least painful things that I think I do. It's less painful than hair injections or facial injections or things like that, even though it's super scary, obviously. But that works pretty well for just PRP. If I'm actually using stem cells, because with stem cells, I'm getting the stem cells from the patient. So I'm getting bone marrow or fat from the patient in a little procedure. So those patients, I generally will actually put to sleep. We have anesthesia in our office, and we'll just do a kind of a moderate sedation so that they're not awake and not in any pain. And we'll get the stem cells, isolate them, and then inject those while they're asleep. So if you're doing stem cells, you're usually asleep. If you're just doing PRP or exosomes, I can do it awake very easily. It's generally five injections. Usually I'm doing two injections on each side into the corpora cavernosa, which are the two kind of tubes that run along the top and fill with blood when you have an erection. And then I'll do one injection at the corona, which is kind of the base of the gland, the tip in there as well. So that's usually five injections. Sometimes more if I have someone who has like a Peyronie's disease or something else that I'm trying to treat. But if it's just kind of a simple ED, then that's what I'm doing, is five injections.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. And are you seeing great results with the outcomes? I mean, I imagine you would, but what kind of results do you typically see, and what would someone expect if they had pretty bad erectile dysfunction going into this treatment afterward?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a great question, and it depends on the person, obviously. Everyone's very different. Certainly have seen some pretty amazing results in some patients that I wasn't sure were going to have any results, which is always pretty fantastic. I find that, you know, people who have had ED for less time, or who have less severe ED, or who have less risk factors associated with it, like heart disease and diabetes and high blood pressure and smoking and things like that, they tend to respond faster and are a little easier to get responses out of. People who've had longer lasting ED or who have associated comorbidities, you know, oftentimes will take several treatments or, you know, multiple of the shockwave therapy treatments of the gains wave sessions. But even those guys, I've had some great responses, but it does take some longer time to get there, which makes sense because they've been in a state of not having, you know, erections for quite a bit longer as well.
Gotcha. I mean, that makes sense to me. Hopefully that makes sense to the listener, because if someone has a lot of other, you know, chronic inflammation and diseases and things going on, then, you know, it's going to be harder for the treatment to work on the vascular system. What is basically the mechanism that we're looking at here? And maybe we can break it down per treatment, but if someone's coming for the PRP injections, what is the mechanism that the PRP is, you know, working on the tissue to either repair, or what exactly is going on?
So it seems like the PRP and the stem cells are working in a similar way. They're basically signaling the cells that are already in the tissue to start repairing themselves. So you're increasing different growth factors like VEGF, which is a growth factor that's going to increase blood vessel formation. So for the penis, obviously, as you get older, a lot of times one of the main problems is you don't have enough blood flow coming in anymore because of atherosclerosis or because of chronic, microvascular disease. So if we can actually repair some of those blood vessels or just create new blood vessels into the area, then we can have a better chance of getting blood in. So that's one of the things that both PRP and stem cells do. They can also repair or change the smooth muscle cells that are inside the penis that are over time can oftentimes get replaced by fat or by collagen, which makes them not able to do their job as well. Sometimes we can see improvement in those cells with the PRP as well as with the stem cells. In some studies, even in animal studies, they've seen repair of nerves and nerve regeneration with both PRP and stem cells, which I think is amazing because, you know, nerves are not easy to repair, but they have definitely seen that in a number of animal studies. And I think that that's something else that's probably happening as well. But the main thing that we know happens is the blood vessels get repaired, you get new blood vessels, you get better blood flow coming in.
That is really exciting. I mean, to think that someone could have nerve, potential, you know, nerve damage or issues with their nerves being repaired with PRP, and also, you know, healing some of the other tissue infiltration, like you said, with fat and collagen and stuff like that. So that's very promising and exciting. With exosomes, what are we looking at there for the mechanism?
So it's basically the same thing. You know, exosomes, for people who don't know, exosomes are, I call them these little messenger bubbles. They're released by stem cells, and they essentially travel nearby, and then they get taken up by other cells in the area. So they're kind of like the action arm of the stem cell. They have within them growth factors and cytokines and messenger RNA and microRNA. But it's basically one of the main ways that stem cells communicate with cells around them to influence the cells around them. So exosomes are pretty new on the scene. It's something that they've only been used clinically for a few years. But the way they work is the exact same way that stem cells work in a lot of the studies that we've seen, because they're essentially carrying these growth factors and these messages to your cells that are already in your body, already in your penis, for instance, and telling those cells, hey, like, we need to change how we're acting. We need to repair ourselves. We need to create healthier tissue. We need to create better blood vessels. So it's the same mechanism of action. There's just less literature out there about exosomes because they're newer than stem cells or PRP.
And is there a patient, you know, an ideal patient that you think is just the stellar picture for somebody to get this treatment? Or, I mean, maybe another way to ask the question would be, are there conditions that are absolutely contraindications where you would not recommend that they get the treatment?
You know, if anybody has active cancers, I don't do treatments on them until I've gotten the all clear from their doctors, just because, you know, we don't want to aggravate the cancer or cause any problems with the treatment course. Other than that, everything, it's mostly a case-by-case basis, but there aren't a lot of other, you know, for sure contraindications. You know, in people who have had like if you've had erectile dysfunction for 20 years and, you know, it happened because you had a prostate surgery 20 years ago and you had some pretty major nerves cut and you've had no response for 20 years, then, you know, the chances of being able to recover that function are pretty low. It's not impossible. And certainly if you want to go through it, we're happy to do it for you. But those patients are not likely to have as good a reaction as someone who is, you know, just a few years out from prostate surgery, or they have ED from just normal sort of vascular aging reasons. Or I have a lot of patients who actually don't have any dysfunction. They're pretty healthy, very aware of health and prevention and staying on track. And they do these therapies because they want to prevent the aging of the penis, if you will. They want to prevent ED from happening down the line. And actually, a lot of those guys are really happy and actually do notice improvements, even though they didn't have a lot of problems to begin with.
Yeah, you said something there that I think is really key for us to kind of maybe tune into or highlight a little bit more, is, you know, like the aging of the penis or genitalia for men and women over time. And, you know, it's not something that I think a lot of people are talking about, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to get you on the show today. And a lot of people, I think, are, you know, probably silently concerned about this over time, and they don't really think that there's anything that can be done because they're not, you know, hearing about these treatments probably, you know, from their conventional doctors or even aware of it. So what, you know, we've talked about, you know, infiltration of fat into the tissue. What other things could happen or are happening typically with aging of male genitalia, aging of the penis, so to speak?
So a number of different things happen. The most common cause of ED as we get older is some kind of vascular problem. So some kind of blood flow problem. Either the blood's not getting there or it's not staying there. And actually the most common cause of ED is something that is known as venous leak by layman, but it's not actually it's not a vein problem. It's actually a problem of those smooth muscle cells, which are the cells, again, inside the corpora cavernosa. And what happens is those tubes, those cells get replaced, and those corpora cavernosa become less stretchy. And because they aren't able to stretch out as much, you can't have as big of an erection, you're not able to compress the veins that are on the outside. And so therefore the blood essentially just comes back out again as soon as it goes in. So that's what they call venous leak, but it's actually a problem of the cells in the penis, those smooth muscle cells that are getting replaced by other types of cells. And that's usually due to either aging or some kind of inflammation over time. And as you know, inflammation is the root of most diseases, and including this one. And so it's things like smoking and eating too much sugar and, you know, uncontrolled diabetes and high blood pressure and being overweight and not exercising and autoimmune disorders, you know, all of these things that cause inflammation in the body also cause inflammation in the penis, and that is going to predispose those smooth muscle cells in the penis to be replaced by cells that are not as good at doing that job. So that's the most common kind. The second most common kind is like an arterial insufficiency. So basically the blood cannot even get to the penis, and that's a typical like atherosclerosis kind of patient. So we know that the blood vessels that supply the penis are very similar to the ones that supply the heart or your brain or everywhere else in your body, but they're smaller than the blood vessels that go to your heart or your brain or other places. And so when you have, you know, atherosclerosis or plaque that's building up in blood vessels all over your body, we actually see the effects of that in the penis before we see it in the heart or in the brain. So we see, you know, ED is oftentimes an early warning sign before you get heart attacks or before you get strokes or things like that. So it's important, obviously, to pay attention to what's going on in a sort of full body systemic level in guys who have ED, because it's obviously the penis is important, and we look at that, but you also want to look at what else is going on that's causing this problem to happen.
Yeah, that's very well said. I liken erectile dysfunction to, you know, that early warning sign or an acronym for like potential early death that could be preventable. And I'm really glad you talked about the venous leakage and what that actually is, because I think a lot of people don't even know what that is or what's really going on there. and then my focus is mostly on male hormones. And I'm always looking at, you know, what their testosterone levels are, total and free and all that. And there's some research that says, I believe if it's less than 400 total testosterone or 400 or less, then you're already developing that venous leakage, so to speak. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're right. Low testosterone is one of the risk factors for the smooth muscle cells in the corpora cavernosa turning from, you know, regular cells into fat cells. And so that's something I tell my men too, you know, low testosterone is not just something that makes you feel kind of miserable. It's actually harmful to a lot of parts of your body, including your penis, over time.
Yeah, that's disturbing. I mean, hopefully that would scare some people into being motivated to do something about their health who are listening. I think that's concerning. Are you seeing a lot of more younger men, or, you know, when you first started doing this, were you ever surprised that you know, you weren't seeing all men 50 plus years old, or like what is kind of like your age range from youngest to oldest patient roughly?
I have definitely had patients that were in their 20s and 30s who have ED. A lot of those guys, or at least some of those guys, there was other things going on. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't because they had a poor blood flow or such like that. It was maybe they were consuming too much porn and they had become immune to actual normal sort of sexual relationships with their partner. They were overstimulated by pornography or things like that, or just had other things going on, stress, you know, too much stress, low testosterone, you know, other issues going on. Certainly most of my men are in the 40 plus range that I see, but I've definitely had patients come in younger than that. And especially now that, you know, as a culture, as a society, because we're seeing so much low testosterone, so much hypogonadism in our male population, we know that the number of men who have, you know, legitimate low testosterone has gone up significantly in the last 50 years. And because of that, we're seeing the repercussions of that. And one of those things that we see is erectile dysfunction.
Yeah, it does seem like it is this epidemic that not enough people are aware of in everyday life. You know, when you go out there outside of your kind of your circles, so to speak, and you talk to people outside of the medical community, and they're usually shocked that this is an issue. With all this, all the things that you've been talking about and everything, we've talked a lot about erectile dysfunction. What other conditions are you treating with these therapies? You know, can this help things like premature ejaculation? And then before I get ahead of myself, you talked about blood flow. Is there a way that you can measure or listen to blood flow in the penis, or any diagnostics there?
You can do Doppler testing. That's probably the most common thing that's done. And I don't do that in my office because I'm not a urologist, but I definitely have patients if they're interested, you know, in getting Doppler studies with their doctor ahead of time. They can definitely do that. That will give you an idea of, you know, just the blood flow in all the different arteries, whether it's staying in the penis, whether you have a venous leak, like that can all be diagnosed by Doppler. I don't do it in my practice because whether or not you have, you know, one of several different things causing ED, like whether it's a vascular problem from venous leak or whether it's a vascular problem from arterial insufficiency, it doesn't really change the way that I use my treatment modalities, the injections, the shockwave therapy, the nitric oxide boosters, the testosterone, all of those things. I would use them the same way, you know, whether or not you had X amount of venous leak or not. But yes, I do think that it's certainly helpful to quantify, you know, really what's going on, and Dopplers are probably the best way to do that.
Okay, gotcha. And then are you treating conditions like premature ejaculation? And you mentioned Peyronie's disease, so maybe we can talk about that after premature ejaculation.
Yeah. You know, I see some premature ejaculation. I have treated some with the shockwave therapy, with like the Gainswave. Certainly there are some supplements that can sometimes be helpful for that. Like there's some St. John's wort variants that can be helpful sometimes. I don't do like the behavioral counseling part of that. Sometimes there's a, you know, seeing a sex therapist and doing some behavioral changes and working on that end of it is actually as helpful or even more helpful for premature ejaculation patients, but certainly I will do some of the other things that that I can do from a medical standpoint.
Excellent. Spectacular. And it does seem to go back to, you mentioned patients who have, you know, are using, you know, a lot of porn or watching a lot of porn rather. And it seems like that can be linked to premature ejaculation for some men in certain scenarios. With, yeah. Are you, with the Peyronie's disease, are you basically doing all the above? And then how many treatments do you usually see are effective for an average case of Peyronie's disease?
So with Peyronie's disease, which as you know, is a kind of a scarring disease of the penis, you get this fibrous plaque that can, it can be painful, it can cause curvature of the penis, and it can also cause erectile dysfunction of the penis. So it can cause any or all of those things. Oftentimes happens, you know, we don't even know why a lot of times. We don't know if it's an autoimmune thing, if it's a trauma thing, or if it just happens. But there's not a lot of great therapies out there. I do like the combination of the biologics, like the PRP, the exosomes, things like that, or which we actually inject right into the plaque. And then you follow that with the Gainswave or the shockwave therapy. And I use a little bit different type of wave and attachment for that. So I'm essentially going right into the plaque in a little different way with the shockwave therapy with Peyronie's disease, which helps to kind of break up the plaque a little bit. And then I'll also use like a penis pump or something like that, that the patients will do at home. So a lot of it, you know, it depends on the patient, obviously, but it does take a little longer to see improvements with Peyronie's patients than a typical ED patients in my experience. You know, something like, you know, 12 or more of the Gainswave or the shockwave therapy treatments is often needed for those patients. And maybe a couple of sessions of the injections, whether it's with PRP or with exosomes or whatever, because you're really trying to break up that plaque and also keep, you know, restore blood flow and kind of repair that tissue. So it takes a little bit longer, but I've had some really good success with it. And it's one of those things that's really hard to treat otherwise. And so men are very grateful when we can help straighten things out and make things less painful and just work better.
Right. Yeah, I would imagine. And do you see the exosomes and the stem cells moving the needle more than just doing PRP in those cases?
Yeah, I do. Because, you know, I think it makes sense because you're really trying to, you know, break up that plaque and then repair that tissue. And so it makes sense that the more of those sort of regenerative factors that you have in there, the better it will be. You know, unfortunately, with the studies that have been done, and there are certainly a number of them at this point, but there's not a lot of comparative studies. So I haven't seen a lot of studies that compare PRP versus, you know, stem cells from fat versus stem cells from bone marrow versus exosomes for Peyronie's, for instance. There are studies on some of those different modalities separately against like placebo or against nothing, but they don't compare them to each other. So I would love to see that done at some point so we could know, you know, exactly how much better one is over the other one. But I do think that in general, the stem cells and exosomes are better than just PRP.
That makes sense to me. And you know, you've talked a lot about the Gainswave, and you said for Peyronie's 12 separate treatments with the Gainswave as in combination with PRP or stem cells, et cetera. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's usually right. I mean, you know, we always start with six sessions over like 3 weeks is kind of what's normal to start with when you're doing any Gainswave protocol. But most of my Peyronie's patients need more than six.
Got it. Okay. And what's the, for the listeners, what's the mechanism if they're not familiar with Gainswave, shockwave therapy, what's the mechanism there? And, you know, does the treatment hurt? Is it, you know, mostly effective with all the cases that you're talking about?
Gainswave, which is also, Gainswave is a brand name. It's kind of a network of doctors across the United States, but it's using a acoustic wave therapy, which is also called low intensity extracorporeal shockwave therapy. So kind of a long name, but basically very safe therapy that's been around for at least a decade at this point. And it's a handheld machine that you do typically in the doctor's office. We will usually put a numbing cream on first because it can get a little zippy, a little zappy. if you don't have a numbing cream. But with numbing cream, it's completely comfortable. So we usually numb the penis, we put a numbing cream on, and then we do the therapy that it's maybe a 20-minute session. Essentially, it's these high-pressure sound waves. They're going into the tissue, and they're creating just a sort of a micro trauma. So a little tiny bit of trauma that's not very much, but it's enough to trigger your body into thinking that it has had some trauma. And so you start this sort of cascade of events that leads to repair. And so it's similar in some ways to like a PRP or stem cell. So you kind of get increased blood vessel formation over time, potential of breaking up some of the plaque and atherosclerotic blood vessels. You get increased local nitric oxide release in the blood vessels, which is the chemical that signals that to open up those blood vessels. And then you can also get stem cell recruitment with that as well. So well studied, and the rate of people who have improvements in ED in studies is somewhere between about 70% and 90% of patients will have improvements in ED after a series of, you know, six sessions or so. In real life practice, I think I would say probably 80 to 90% of my regular ED patients have improvement if they go through a series of at least six Gainswave treatments. It's actually pretty remarkable.
That is impressive. That's definitely impressive. And then is there a certain order that people usually do if they're coming in to see you and they're coming from out of town, and they do you always do Gainswave first and then the injections afterwards, or vice versa? Is there like a way to do this that is more effective?
You know, I've done it both ways. I haven't seen anybody study what the best order is. I've done it both ways, and I think it makes sense both ways. I mean, basically you can create the microtrauma and then you can inject the PRP and stem cells right afterwards, or you can inject the stem cells and PRP and while they're there, you can kind of activate them further by creating that, you know, by doing the sound waves. But I think honestly, different doctors do different things. I think it works well both ways. I tend to do the injections first and do the shockwave therapy right afterwards, you know, same, like literally like 5 minutes later. So it's basically all at the same time. And then I have the patients follow up, like I said, either at home or with me for the rest of the series of the Gainswave treatments so that they're getting a full session. And meanwhile, also making sure that their testosterone is up. I always give them a nitric oxide supplement to take home with them and kind of talk to them about nitric oxide and lifestyle and things like that also are obviously very important.
That's awesome. That makes a lot of sense to me. That's spectacular. I mean, I think it's just so great that you're doing this work for men. And do you also work with women?
I do. I work with women as well. I mean, you know, it's about, I'd probably say 60-40. I will have a little bit more male patients, but I have a lot of great female patients. And we do the same kind of injections. We do the O-shot with stem cells, with the exosomes and PRP. So injecting the genitalia, we do. I have several different vaginal lasers that I use for women. And you also can do the Gainswave on women where they call it something different, but it's essentially the same thing where you're essentially using that same machine, same sound waves for the female. So we can do the same kind of therapies. It's just, we just modify them a little bit depending on who we're doing them on.
Got it. That makes sense. And when someone comes out to see you and they're under general anesthesia, is it like a half day event for them, or is this a couple hours, or how long?
It depends on what they're getting done. I have a colleague, Dr. Harry Adelson, who is a naturopath, and he does, he's one of the best in the, at least in the US, probably in the world, at using stem cells for musculoskeletal pain. So he does, you know, joint pain, neck pain, back pain, basically does a ton of different injections using stem cells. So we have a lot of patients who will come in for sort of big procedures. We have something we call the full body stem cell makeover, where we're essentially injecting, where Dr. Adelson's injecting all of the major joints, including all down the neck, the back, you know, all the major joints in the whole body. And then I'm doing the face, the hair, and the sexual injections. And we do it all in like a 3-hour procedure. And that's probably our longest procedure. So that's a 3-hour procedure. Everything else, it takes, you know, between an hour and a half and 2 hours if it's just some variation on that.
Got it. Wow, that does seem like it's like the full Monty, huh? So you get it all.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. I wish that I could do it to myself, but I can't be under sedation and do it to myself. So.
Right. Yeah.
Someday, that's my goal. I'll teach somebody to do it, then I'll just get it done myself.
It seems like a good, you know, birthday present at around age, you know, 45, 50, go and get that whole procedure done and, you know, because if you think about it, most people have some neck or back pain or an injury that they had or a car accident that still flares up occasionally, at least.
Yep. Yeah, that's perfect. I know. I was just riding my Peloton this morning, and my wrist was hurting. It's been hurting for a while, and I was just thinking, oh, I got to get my Dr. Adelson to give me some stem cells in my wrist. Like, it's, you know, it's nice knowing people that can do that kind of thing, but it's obviously not everyone knows people, but it's a nice thing to know about at least, and start to be able to research if you have problems like that.
Yeah, I bet. That's awesome. So, I mean, I don't want to get too heavy into costs, but, you know, what are the price ranges for these things from, like, you know, PRP injections and Gainswave to the kind of full Monty procedure if someone wanted to go all in and do that?
The Gainswave procedure, Gainswave is fairly consistent across the US, and I think that the pricing right now is about $3,000 for the first six treatments, and then the price goes down after that. I think if you get more than that, obviously it varies a little bit by clinic, and sometimes there are specials and things such as that. With PRP, usually it's between $1,000 and $1,500-ish for the P shot, for instance, just a basic PRP. And then if you're adding stem cells, that's pretty variable. It depends on where we get the stem cells from, whether you're awake or not, you know, whether we're using exosomes, but it's definitely going to be at least a couple $1,000s to start with to do the stem cells. And it can definitely go up from there. And then, you know, if you're doing the full body, it's going to run you, I don't even know what the cost is right now, but it's definitely, you know, multiple thousands of dollars. But it's something that, you know, it's a lot of people who are doing it consider it to be an investment in their, you know, health now, as well as kind of prevention over the next 5, 10, 20 years.
Yeah, it definitely seems, I mean, to me, you know, being in the industry, it definitely seems like a good investment in your health. And, you know, I mean, maybe somebody who hasn't ever had any regenerative medicine injections, like maybe they need to get their knee treated first, for example, to prove that this is something worth their money or their time and their investment. But, you know, from everything that you've talked about today and everything that I've seen with these therapies is that it's, you know, I mean, it's life-changing. If someone doesn't have a sexual life or any sexual health, and then this can basically save that potentially a marriage or a relationship, but also, you know, get their health back on track. Because as you said, and, you know, you write in your bio, sexual health is part of our overall wellness, but a lot of us have been kind of conditioned to think that for some reason they're separate today.
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually really interesting. I have one of my favorite patients I treated with stem cells and with Gainswave a few years ago. He was a prostate cancer survivor, had prostate cancer and surgery like 4 years previous, and since the surgery had not had any erections. So he couldn't get an erection with Viagra or Cialis or anything. And his doctor, or even like Trimix, Bimix, the injections, nothing worked for him. And his urologist told him, you know, he basically needed to get a penis implant if he wanted to have any sex life. But he was like 50, and, you know, he ran businesses, like just a very healthy guy. So wanted to try everything else he could first. And so we did the stem cell injections. We did a series of Gainswave. We did hormone, you know, optimization, nitric oxide, et cetera. And he, at about 3 or 4 months later, he called me and said that he had had an erection and he and his wife had sex for the first time in 4 years. And he was obviously very excited. But what was really interesting is he said, you know, he and his wife were having this really great relationship and he was really happy. But he also said that he had noticed that he was feeling better and he was doing better at his job and he was more confident and he was like making better decisions. Like, it was this weird thing where, you know, the effects of this new sort of vitality really overflowed into many other aspects of his life that he wasn't, you know, thinking was going to happen. And it was obviously a very nice surprise for him when it did.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love that you shared that story and that he, you know, in particular for him, it was spilling over into his work life and that self-confidence. Cause I think that, you know, a lot of times when we think about, you know, sexual health or things like that, we don't think that, oh, that's going to improve my work life, or that's going to improve how I carry myself in the world outside of the bedroom. So I think that's really, really important. And I think men who, you know, especially going through procedures for prostate cancer, it's essentially, for a lot of them, it can be the end of their, potentially it could be the end of their sexual, basically, career, if you will. So, you know, this is hopeful. I mean, that's very hopeful for them. And I remember when I was, a while back, I was working at a men's clinic, and we had a guy who actually had got the penis implant, essentially, and because they had really severe ED and they didn't want to do the Trimix anymore. And they were on testosterone therapy. I don't think they had prostate cancer. Don't remember that being part of the diagnosis, but they got an infection from the surgery and they had to have it taken out and then replaced again. And it just seemed like such a horrible, horrible thing to have happen. So,
yeah,
you know, this is a lot better option, in my opinion. So
it's a better option, at least to try. Like, I feel like if you're, you know, if you're at the point where a penile implant is your next thing, it makes sense if you can, if you have the money, because this is not covered by insurance at this point, to try some of these regenerative things. Because when you get implants, they essentially have to kind of take out the erectile tissue that you already have. They kind of scoop that out to make way for the implant. So you can't really go back, you know, like once you get the implant, then that's what you have. And not that, you know, and that works well for a lot of people, but if that's something that you really are wanting to avoid, then I recommend thinking about finding doctors who are doing some of these other advanced sort of regenerative treatments. Even if they don't work 100% of the time, they do work quite a bit of the time, and at least can be helpful for that number of people, of men.
Definitely, definitely true. Do you have any other case studies that were kind of exciting or that stick out for you from the years of doing this treatment?
I mean, there's a lot of the same kinds of stories, a lot of the, like, similar to that one, you know, or just variations on that. I've had similar stories with Peyronie's, I think, has also been really impactful. I had one patient that it was a guy here that had Peyronie's, you know, for 5 years or so, and had this curvature and was very self-conscious about it, and it was painful, and he didn't really like having sex. And I saw him, we did this sort of intensive day of the shockwave therapy and the injections, and then I sent him to my other clinic to do follow-up Gainswave, and I saw him about a month or two later. He was still kind of in the middle of some of his sessions, and he wasn't perfect yet, but I saw him in the hallway at the clinic, and he walked out into the hallway and he just ran up to me and gave me this huge hug and was like, "You don't even know," like, just having someone to address this and to take it seriously and to make as much effort as you have to straighten this out and to get rid of this condition, you know, has meant the world to me. And he was already starting to see some softening of the plaque and some improvements in the curvature. And it, you know, again, it hadn't even resolved. It was just sort of headed in the right direction. But these are things that people are embarrassed to talk about, you know, even with their own doctors. And I think it's also because a lot of doctors, the doctors who do take insurance, which I did for a long time, but the ones who do, they're so limited on how much time they can spend with patients. So they don't have the time to really, you know, hear their story and to hear how it's affecting them and to see what they've tried and what they haven't tried and, you know, all of that. So, you know, I feel very grateful to be in a position where I can see patients, spend that time with them and, you know, and try things that, you know, that not everyone gets to try at this point.
Yeah, I can see how that would make those Peyronie's patients, like that case study you said, really excited, because from what I've read, at least, it seems like Peyronie's is, like, there's just really not that much in conventional medicine that is working ever.
Yeah.
And I forget conventional treatments usually are. Is it a prescription medication or other kinds of injections?
You can do other injections. You can essentially do a Xiaflex, which is a injection that dissolves the plaque. Unfortunately, it can sometimes have the side effect of, sort of dissolving extra tissue as well. So you can get some trauma from that sometimes. They can be dangerous. You can do verapamil as well, calcium channel blocker for that, which I've heard is pretty painful. You know, all of these things can work, and I would never discourage people from doing them. It's just that there are now some other options that are completely safe that can be tried, you know, for people who either have tried other things or want to try something that, you know, really does use your own body to heal itself versus having to use a lot of drugs and chemicals and such that can sometimes be dangerous.
Yeah, that definitely sounds kind of scary to me, just hearing that if, you know, someone could have their tissue dissolved kind of by accident as a, you know, collateral damage, so to speak, from that injection. That is concerning.
Right.
Like that kind of going backwards, you know, the whole first do no harm oath and everything. Like, we're trying to not do that. But yeah, that's, I mean, that is that kind of medicine that they, more heroic medicine, they, we're going to have more side effects potentially. So that is a concern. Are there any other things that we didn't discuss today that you wanted to share with the audience or things that we touched on, but you wanted to go in a little bit more depth?
Yeah, the only other thing I think that I always talk to my patients about is nitric oxide and the importance of nitric oxide, especially in the aging male or female, but anyone over the age of 40, because nitric oxide is the main chemical signal that basically tells your blood vessels to vasodilate or to open up and to get the blood flow into the penis. So if you're, you know, when you're ready to have sex, your nerves trigger nitric oxide release, the blood flow comes in, and that nitric oxide being in the body and in that area is what keeps the blood there. And what happens over time is that your blood vessels, they lose the ability to make nitric oxide because they are filled with atherosclerosis and plaque and inflammation, and you have this endothelial dysfunction. And nitric oxide, a lot of it is made inside the blood vessel, so you can't make it as you get older. So by the time you're 40, you're making about half as much nitric oxide as you were when you were 20. And this is not just important for erections, it's important for being able to exercise and do good workouts, and it's important for your blood pressure. And, you know, there's a lot of things that nitric oxide is tied to, but when you're talking about sexual health, it's key, because medications like Viagra, the way they work, as you know, is they essentially keep nitric oxide around longer, so that it can work for longer, but you still have to have your own nitric oxide to begin with. So if you have guys who are taking Viagra and they're needing higher and higher doses and it's not working as well, one of the things to think about is, how's your nitric oxide? And you can do things like exercise, like red light therapy, like hyperbaric oxygen therapy, or take a supplement like Neo40 or Affirm or one of these supplements that you're going to be increasing your own nitric oxide levels. Also avoiding antiseptic mouthwash is very important for keeping your nitric oxide levels up in your body and being able to get it from food. So there's a whole lot on this, but basically think about nitric oxide if you're getting a little older and you're, you know, having ED and there's, you know, other causes have been kind of ruled out.
Yeah, that's very helpful. A very, very important point. And thanks for sharing that with everybody, because I think that most people are, as you said, they're nitric oxide deficient. And I do see that a lot where men are, you know, taking higher and higher doses of these Viagra medications. And they're kind of like, you know, it worked 6 months ago or a year ago, but now it's not working. You know, I don't know what that's about. That's doesn't make any sense to them. But now, you know, with that framework that you just mentioned, it makes a lot of sense. And the antiseptic mouthwash, that is curious. So is that inhibiting the nitric oxide in some way?
So yeah, so what's happening is, as you get older, you become more and more reliant on getting your nitric oxide from food. So it's a different pathway, but you can actually take in nitrate-rich food, like green leafy vegetables, beets, you know, even dark chocolate, things that are high in nitrate, and it gets broken down into nitric oxide in your body. But the first thing that happens, the first part of that pathway happens in your mouth, and you actually need the oral microbiome to be able to do that first reduction phase. And if you kill the bacteria in your mouth because you're taking Listerine every morning, then you don't have the bacteria to be able to reduce nitrate into nitrite, which is that first step. So no antiseptic mouthwashes, or not very often, is what I tell patients. And then the other thing that is, this, the second step actually happens in your stomach, and you need stomach acid to be able to complete the second step. And so people who are taking especially PPIs, especially protonics and the proton pump inhibitors, which we know are really bad for us for a lot of reasons, but people who are on that especially cannot make nitric oxide, but even just regular antacids, Zantac, things like that, can inhibit the formation of nitric oxide from food. So getting rid of those things when possible, it can make a big difference.
That's great advice. That's super helpful. And, you know, just proving again how important the microbiome in the mouth and in the whole gastrointestinal tract, you know, is so important for health, and also stomach acid and things like that. A lot of these things that people may not think are related to sexual health, kind of like how you mentioned in the beginning with the vascular health being the whole body is, you know, it's kind of like that old song for kids, you know, the hip bone's connected to the thigh bone.
Yes, yes.
it totally is. About, yeah. So, with, you know, maybe you can have an adult version for sexual health or something, but.
yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it is all connected. And I think, you know, that is one of the, I think, the hard things for adults is that we're kind of, once you get sick enough or you have to go to a specialist once or twice, then we start thinking about our bodies like, okay, well, now I'm going to the heart doctor, or now I'm going to the orthopedic doctor for my knee surgery or whatever. And, you know, that has its place for sure. However, it is all connected. And I mean, those doctors know it's all connected. It's just that the way the system is set up, it does Yes. condition people to think that, oh, this is all separate. So yeah, it is all connected.
It is. Yeah. And how you take care of yourself, you know, the basics are still the basics, and the foundational stuff is still the most important. People always ask me, you know, at the end of like these podcasts, like, you know, you talk about all these cool therapies and this and that. I'm like, what do you tell patients? Like, what's the first thing, the most important thing that patients can do right now? And I always say it still goes back to the foundations of health. Like, you still have to eat healthy. You have to exercise, reduce your stress, you know, sleep well. Like, it's the core things that you've been hearing about since you were a kid that are not, you know, they're not easy, but they are fairly simple. Those are the things that are going to create the most, you know, sexual healthiness. It's just that when you need some extra help, then now we have some other things that we can do for you.
Exactly. Yeah. Very well said. I agree completely. Well, I mean, this has been spectacular. And I mean, I've learned some new things, which is always one of the great things about doing podcasts with people like yourself who are amazing experts in what they do. And as far as how people can reach you, you're on social media. So Instagram at dr.amybkillen, K-I-L-L-E-N. And then also Facebook, right? Dr. Amy B. Killen. And
yes.
You have a YouTube channel, Amy Killen MD. I almost forgot your website. So dramykillen.com. So you can go to dramykillen.com and check out how to make an appointment there, I assume, and other things on your website. Is there anything else that I missed there and how people can reach you or what they need to know?
Those are the main ones. Yeah. I try to stay, I'm very active on Instagram. That's kind of one of my favorites, but I am becoming more active on the rest of them. So, you know, obviously love to hear from people and help when I can.
Thank you so much again for being on the show. And, this was spectacular, and thanks for all the work you do, for men and women, for their sexual health and overall health. We need people like you out there, and there's so many sick people today that unfortunately don't even know how sick they are and, you know, what can be done, and that there is a solution and there is hope. So I appreciate your time and appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me. I've had a good discussion with you. I appreciate it.
Excellent. So everybody, please share the show with your friends and family, and please give us a 5-star review if you're listening on a platform already.
Now here's for my mandatory disclaimer. This is a medical information podcast and is only for general information purposes. It does not substitute or constitute the practice of medicine or any medical practices, including the giving of medical advice to any individual. And please observe that no doctor-patient relationship has been formed here. This medical podcast offers health, hormone, fitness, and nutrition information and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitution for, nor does it replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health, you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional. Do not disregard, avoid, or delay obtaining medical or health-related advice and appropriate treatment from your healthcare professional. Users should seek the care of their physician or healthcare professional for any such conditions. The use of any information provided on this podcast is solely at your own risk. The contents and topics of this podcast have not been evaluated by the FDA nor approved by any other government or official body. The topics and content covered is not intended to diagnose, cure, or prevent any disease or disorder of any kind. Developments in medical research may impact the health, fitness, and nutritional advice that appears here on the podcast in the future episodes. No assurance can be given that the advice contained in this podcast will always include the most recent findings or developments in medicine with respect to the particular material covered. If you are in the United States and think you are having a medical or health emergency, call your healthcare professional or 911 immediately. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to hearing your feedback and looking forward to have you on future podcasts. Thank you.